Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, CPA, CFP practitioner, and AEP, on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Yes, welcome to Your Financial Choices. Today is June 12, 2019. The markets were down today, the Dow closing at 26,004, the NASDAQ at 7,792, and the S&P at 2,879. Our topic tonight is, what are we teaching our children about finances? We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Lori C is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. If you're talking live with us, if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just give your question to Lori and she'll bring it in to me. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So tonight, what are we teaching our children about finances? And this could be our adult children as well, as I'll, you know, build up to that as we go through the show, starting a little younger than that, but moving on to our adult years. And it's kind of funny, I had been thinking about doing a show on this, and coincidentally, all of a sudden, like I was getting emails about articles, and there was an article in the New York Times, an article at Horse's Mouth, and I thought, wow, timeliness. I don't know, maybe there was something that had prompted me to think about it, I'm not sure, but I thought, this is really, you know, important information that people need to hear about. So if we are not teaching our children about finances, then I would expect the only lesson they're really going to get is by watching us. And what they see may not be the whole story. Some people believe kids should be left in the dark or learn it on their own. But let's think about how much further ahead our kids might be if we share a little bit of information with them. You know, why not, in my opinion? So I want to go through three different articles that were recently published that cover teaching kids about money, and another one providing a checklist for your newly minted high school graduate. And then the final one, 8 financial tips for young adults. And then I want to end with some personal experiences and stories, if we have time, to kind of demonstrate, you know, what an impact this may have. So the first article is from Horse's Mouth. It's really directed, as I said, more to kids, and it's called 10 Tips for Teaching Kids About Money, and it's by Charles Sherry, MSc. I assume a master's in social work. And he basically talks about kids learning the basics in school, reading, writing, and arithmetic, but so many schools don't ever really teach our kids about money. If they do offer a class, it's an elective typically in high school, and sometimes that's after the habits have been formed. So he thinks it's really important to talk about your finances early and probably age appropriately. So he says, while we can't shelter our children, we can certainly teach them. And he created a guide of practical tips that help put kids on the right path. Now, we may or may not agree with all of these tips. These are just his tips and ways of, getting something going, and I think I'll talk about some of them. His first tip is teaching delayed gratification. He said, this is the hardest part. Some of us are better than others, but few have truly mastered the art of patience. If your kids want to buy a pricey item, help them save for it. You can lend support by setting up various methods for savings. Remember the piggy bank. Money goes in, never really comes out. But he recommends using jars. I've heard this a number of times going back even, 10 years ago, where people talk about helping your kids learn how to save using jars, where you have a jar for saving, a jar for giving, and a jar for spending. That may or may not work. Some iteration of that may be better for you. So, for example, I don't think he's necessarily suggesting you do like one-third, one-third, one-third. It could be 10% in the giving jar. It could be 20% in the saving jar and, 40, 10, and maybe 50% in the spending. Who knows? Whatever combination it may need. I'm not sure how many young kids really need a spending jar. I know for our own children, what we would do is when they were given gifts, birthday gifts, they had to save at least half. So half would go into their savings account. And then if there was something they had wanted to buy that was not a necessity, they would have to contribute to it, whatever it might be, if it was a game or toy or something like that. So they had to participate in the paying for that item. Probably as parents, we probably paid for more than we probably should have under these kind of circumstances. But regardless, our kids always knew that half their money was going into their savings account. And ultimately, my adult children would have money then for when they went to college for spending money, and it was in their bank account. So they were learning how to manage that, and that's where I'm not a fan of debit cards at all, don't like them at all, but the kids would use debit cards to manage their expenses, and they could watch and see how their accounts were doing. So that savings when they were little really did make a difference for them when they were older and they were learning how to manage their money. So I would say that is a good idea. It's just some iteration of that, but get them saving that. Because so many people also give monetary gifts these days. You hear it all the time. People say, oh, those kids have everything. They don't need anything. What am I going to do? I'll just get them a gift card. Gift card works the same way. Have them set aside. What we've done is, okay, you give me the Target card. I'll buy groceries and or whatever. We might need necessities at the store. And then you can give the kids half the money for their savings and half the money to buy something for themselves, if that's how you want to do it. So the first lesson was teaching delayed gratification. You hear that story about the Oreos. Do you give a kid one cookie today or two cookies tomorrow? It's really discipline, I think, is what you're really teaching them. Not as much delayed gratification as discipline, like setting a goal and sticking to it and kind of disciplining yourself in resisting impulses. Number two, Mr. Sherry's suggestion was incorporate giving it away. That goes back to the saving jar. So he believes giving is important and it should be tied to something your children believe in. It creates a strong sense of altruism and selflessness that, if taught early, will blossom in them as adults. When it comes to charity, let their treasure follow their heart. That is a wonderful idea. I could see where some children may resent that and grow up not to be altruistic because maybe they think, oh, mom and dad made me always save money to give away and I didn't feel comfortable with that. And now that I'm old enough to take care of my own money, I'm not going to give it away anymore. So you never know. Sometimes the lessons you're trying to teach your children take the opposite, have the opposite impact. So make sure that you explain it and understand it. And there's nothing wrong with your children also learning maybe about giving back in other ways than monetary ways. It could be helping at a soup kitchen and things like that. So there are a number of ways to teach giving. So folks, we are talking about what are we teaching our children about finances? So first, we're going to start with this article from Horse's Mouth, talk about just some simple steps for children that are young. We're going to move into a checklist for, kind of post-high school age, and then a final list for young adults. If you have questions about these kinds of topics or some other question that you need answered tonight, you can certainly give us a call, talk live on air with us. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. And the number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Tom Druckenmiller. Join me and our other folk music hosts each weekday evening from 7 to 9 and Sunday from 11 to 1 for a great mix of classic folk, bluegrass and old time, Celtic, blues, and contemporary songwriters, plus interviews, concert information, and more.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We are talking tonight about what are we teaching our children about finances. And my older listening audience who have adult children, there are points to this as well, even for us to help our older adult children understand finances, not just for them, but guess what? For us, the things they may need to know as we age as well. So I'm hoping to tack that on at the end here. So we're starting first at the beginning with the young children. So we're using as a resource Charles Sherry, who wrote this article, 10 Tips for Teaching Kids About Money from Horse's Mouth. So number three, kids need money, and the theory without practice won't work. Kids need a hands-on lesson. And he talks about allowance and gives some resources for some average allowances that you may expect to pay children depending on their age. And that goes hand in hand with that whole teaching, the delayed gratification, having the jars. I mentioned at the beginning that if they receive gifts, for example, how are they saving the gifts, the monetary gifts, for savings, for spending, and for maybe giving? The same thing can apply if they need an allowance. So they need money. If you decide to pay them an allowance, how are they going to also distribute that? And maybe how they earn that. You want to make sure that they are doing, you know, the proper chores to earn that money. That is, I think, really important. And when we expect them to go out into the workforce someday and expect a paycheck, well, it should really be for the work they've performed and not just sit back and collect the money. So you want to make sure that allowance has some meaning behind it and they have chores that they have to do. And then if they understand when they work, they get paid, they get this allowance, what are they going to do with their allowance? They're going to have a goal for saving, a goal for spending. If they're going to spend, what are they going to spend it on? Is that a good goal? Is that something, a worthwhile goal maybe that they might have depending on you know, if they're going to spend it on frivolous things, they're going to spend it on a special, you know, a book or something like that that will, you know, have lasting value or something special for when they go on vacation. So kids need money. Allowances can teach a lot of lessons. We really didn't pay our kids allowances. Just we felt like as part of the community of the family, there were just things that they should do and participate in. If they did special extraordinary things for us, then yes, we did most likely give them some compensation for that. But for the most part, they didn't get an allowance. And I wouldn't say that they didn't learn to manage money, because we also had the when they received gifts, they had to manage that money. But they also were rewarded, I think, through cooperation in the family. So when the kids were much younger, and they did a good job working together with each other, meaning my oldest was babysitting the younger two. If they all got along, they all did a good job, everyone followed the rules and followed directions, then we would periodically go to the bookstore and everyone got a book. So in some ways, they did learn that their behavior, their proper behavior, was compensated. So it doesn't always have to be monetary either. Teach by example is his fourth point. He talked about letting your children know that when you spend money, he gave as an example, he used a credit card, and understanding the meaning of what it is when you use a credit card. Now, everybody uses credit cards nowadays, but maybe back then it was, you know, money or credit card. So understand that when you're using a credit card, you actually still are paying for the items. And explaining that you pay off the balance every month. Get into a habit of that. Don't lie to your children. If you're not paying off your balance every month, tell your children you're striving to do that. Or, hey, the reason we're not spending money is because we don't want to build up that credit too much because it costs us money. In fact, I was away in Virginia for a couple days last week, and we went down to a couple museums, and I picked up, I believe it was the Yorktown Museum of the American Revolutionary War, and there was a little book that I picked up in the bookstore, The Way to Wealth by Benjamin Franklin, when he talks about Poor Richard and the Poor Richard Almanac, I believe. And there's a little preface to it in this little book, tiny little book, very easy to read, is the preface to the almanac, is if I'm understanding this correctly from this book. But one of the things he talks about is people spending on credit, and don't let someone have that power over you. So I thought that was really good. And if I have time, I can read from that as well. So teach by example, let your children what you're doing, know what you're doing and understanding. For example, when we used to go to the grocery store with the kids, I would explain what marketing was. They would want, and I've mentioned this before on the show as well, they'd want the macaroni and cheese that had Snow White on the front of the box, and I made sure they understood Snow White was not in the box. It was the same macaroni cheese as all the other macaroni and cheeses, and that it was someone's job to try to trick you into buying certain things, and that's called marketing. So then over the years, I'd say to the kids when they'd want something, they'd be so excited about it. I'd say, now, what is that? What is that called that they're doing to you? And they'd say, marketing. And that's right, they'd say marketing, and then they'd realize, somewhat deflated, yeah, it was really exciting there for a minute, but I realize now that someone's trying to manipulate me, and I'm not going to be taken in by that, and their reasoning took over, and they made good decisions not to be taken in by that marketing. So, and I think it still works for the most part for my children. So teach your children, you know, you can speak these things in front of them. You know, sometimes parents are going through the grocery store and they're not talking at all. You know, the kids might be screaming and the parents aren't paying attention. Talk with them. That's a great opportunity to have dialogue and teach them some lessons as you're going through these various aspects of your life where you might be able to teach them some financial lessons. And in fact, that's what Mr. Sherry also says. Use various examples from your life when you teach your kids about the importance of money and savings. Number five, encourage summer and after school jobs. Trading time for cash via a job helps kids learn the invaluable lesson of hard work. It also supplements savings and provides spending money. For sure, that is great. My children didn't have summer jobs, I have to tell you. So I'm just trying to explain that sometimes people give you tips and it may not always work for your family. If your children don't have a way to get to the particular job, if you're way out in the boondock somewhere. My oldest helped babysit the younger ones. My middle daughter was an athlete and involved in so many sports that if she ever worked, she wouldn't have been able to keep up with her athletics or her schoolwork. And so it just kind of worked that what I told them is their jobs were, you know, the oldest was babysitting and then academics, and the middle was academics and their athletics. And the youngest one was probably the one who got the job at an earliest age. He did work summer jobs in high school, at the high school, in fact, in middle school. But there are jobs even locally they could do, like babysitting or cutting the grass. So it kind of, it's what I did at age 12, babysat every day for some pharmacist. And it really teaches you confidence because you now have earned something and you've learned a skill. So it teaches a lot of confidence. I think it's a great, great, great idea. We're going to finish going through the rest of Mr. Sherry's list when we come back from this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. 8810, and you are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. And tonight we're talking about what are we teaching our children about finances. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you are listening to 88.1 WDIY. If you ever need to listen to shows that you may have missed, you can go to WDIY.org, go to local programming, scroll down to Your Financial Choices, and listen to podcasts that are available there. We are talking about what are we teaching our children about finances, and we're referencing an article by Charles Sherry, 10 Tips for Teaching Kids About Money, and his sixth tip is open a savings account. If you have questions, by the way, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. So open a savings account. So we kind of talked about the first steps where you're teaching them about, you know, saving money and earning money and then teaching by example. Now, maybe getting summer jobs as they get a little bit older, maybe the allowances we talked about. Now, if they have this money, opening a savings account. And savings accounts right now aren't earning a ton of interest, which he is mentioning here. There will be times where it will, but regardless whether it's earning a lot of interest, a little interest, they're still saving money. And that is the goal, to get in the habit of saving. And I know back when my children were small, there were certain banks that offered like an extra $10 if you opened up an account for your child. And so the kids would get that and they'd get excited about it. And then as they maybe could have a goal that after they save X amount of dollars, maybe you could move it to maybe an online bank that paid a higher rate of interest, and then they could learn about how when you save and you save more and you can invest it, and then when you're investing you can earn more. That would be a lesson in and of itself. So talk about the benefits of saving and earning money on your money. Like I say, let your money work for you. Tip number 7, there's an app for that. So today there are mobile apps that can help kids, and he mentions Bankaroo, iAllowance, and PiggyBot. I've not checked these out. I don't know. It's the first I had read about them. I'm not aware of them. I know there are lots of other financial apps for adults to use. I think these must be geared toward children, and you may not be someone who wants your kid to run around with a phone or an iPad opening up bank apps, but it's the concept of finding a way for them to probably keep track of their money. An old-fashioned savings passbook might work. You could set up an Excel spreadsheet on your computer. That could be another way for them to track it if you're not comfortable doing online. So kind of make these tips work for you. Number 8, guide them with goal setting. Are they trying to save for something? Help them come up with a plan, and incentivize with matching funds. So that's something, you know, that maybe you could do too. Maybe do the matching funds for the charitable giving. That might be something that you could try out, where then you could explain to them, oh, someday when you grow up, if you're a saver, sometimes, you know, your employer will match your savings or put some money in if you put some money in. So that's where you can kind of give some examples and talk about, another saving strategy. Discuss the importance of needs versus wants when you're doing that goal setting. So a teenager may need a bicycle, but do they need one with bells and whistles? Or are there reasonably priced bikes that won't bust the savings account? You know, we talk to our children about buying used cars rather than brand new cars. You know, that's an example, and they see it. So what are we teaching them? If we're not talking to our kids about them, what are our kids witnessing? Are our kids, if you're not having conversations with your children about finances, what are they watching and seeing? Are you going to fancy restaurants? Are you buying drinks? Are you buying the most expensive meal and dessert? What are your kids seeing? Are you then putting it on the credit card? They may not see whether you pay the credit card or not, but what are they seeing? And that's what you want to kind of pay attention to. Number 9, money isn't everything. Yes, it's important. It gives us choices by itself. Money can't buy happiness. So that's important to reiterate. And his 10th tip was let them make mistakes. And he had referenced an article written by a graduate student at the University of Arizona, Ashley LeBaron. Let them make mistakes so you can help them learn from them and help them develop habits before they're on their own, when the consequences are a lot bigger and they're dealing with larger amounts of money. Some parents may agree with this or not. Mistakes, I agree, can teach you lessons. I would say if your children aren't listening to you, then certainly let them make mistakes. But if you can teach them to avoid mistakes, I'm not sure why you wouldn't try to teach them, you know, rather than not tell them something so they make a mistake that they will learn from. I'm not about that. So just kind of keep that in mind. Now, interestingly, there was just this article that had come up, and I saved it after I had knew I was going to do the show on this. And this was from the New York Times by Ron Lieber. It was titled "A Financial Checklist for Your Newly Minted High School Graduate." And I have some excerpts from this article. And he suggests, as a gift for graduates, a list of financial tasks. And I thought this was interesting because, you know, it is graduation time. A lot of people have probably already had their high school graduations or their parties and things like that. But this might be something to, you know, print out and fold it up like a card and make it part of the present, this checklist. So this is, again, from the New York Times, and it was a financial checklist for your newly minted high school graduates. And he says, if you want to set your child up properly for college, work, and the years beyond, there are several things you ought to do, help them do, or teach them before too long. Number 1 was budgets. Begin with a conversation about who is paying for what: room, board, phone, transportation, insurance. Pencil it out with a simple spreadsheet or one of the many budgeting apps that did not exist even a decade ago. Now, it's funny, he talks about setting up a budget before your child goes off to college. I got to tell you, we didn't do that with our children. We didn't set up a budget. It was kind of like, oh, we were just paying for everything. But I guess, you know, room and board is kind of all rolled into the tuition bill. My middle daughter didn't have any bills because hers was completely covered. But there are going to be a lot of other great items on this list that I think are really important that relate to some of these things, especially the insurance. So have the talk about budgets, have a talk about banking. And I thought this was really important. Teach your teenager to balance a checkbook. Well, guess what? Most kids don't even know what a checkbook is these days. They use debit cards. I'm not a fan of debit cards. I told my children I don't want them using debit cards. I prefer credit cards because debit cards can be tied to your savings account. And if it's tied to your savings account and someone gets your debit card, they could deplete it. And then you might really be in trouble, because then if you have to go and buy something and your account, you know, doesn't have a balance, that purchase might not go through. If that purchase is for gas and you're 3 hours from home, you could be in trouble. So you always want to also maybe make sure you have some emergencies. But debit cards, you know, have some issues as far as I'm concerned. But they do, he suggests having a checkbook, turning off the overdraft protection to enforce budgeting and avoid fees, or at least to make certain he or she knows how high fees are. Maybe use, you know, you could use a banking app maybe instead of the checkbook if they can still track what they're spending. Then the question was, are adults providing some of the funds that the student's going to need? Make sure they know how to transfer money back and forth so that if they're ever in a pinch, you know how that's going to work before they take off. So test it. Mobile payments. As far as mobile payments, my comment was mistakes can happen. Again, you got to be careful with transfer apps, Venmo, people spending money back and forth. So you got to be careful with mobile payments. Folks, we're at the halfway point. We're talking about what happens. What are we teaching our kids about their finances? If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1, it's 6:30. Your current temperature is 75. Tonight we're going to have showers between 11 and 2 p.m., low around 58. Thursday it's going to be thunderstorms and heavy rain, high near 71. Thursday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with the low around 56. Friday, slight chance of showers, mostly sunny with a high near 72. Friday night, mostly clear with a low around 54. And Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 81. And Saturday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low around 63. And for your Sunday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m., but mostly cloudy with a high near 83. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. We are talking about what are we teaching our children about finances. And at the beginning of the show, I highlighted an article with 10 tips for teaching kids about money. And now we're looking at a checklist for those recent high school graduates going on to college and talking about what they should be aware of. Mobile payments was the last one I had mentioned before the break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Mobile payments. So just be careful. You know, if you've ever listened to your kids, they may even be using these and you don't even realize it. For example, the app Venmo, my kids have used it, and people can transfer money to each other. You just got to be really careful. The author, Ron Lieber, of the article is cautioning folks about mistakes, because if you ever watch kids on their phones, how fast they type, quick, so fast, and everything is instant. And they can make mistakes very easily when you're typing in numbers. Think about it. You mean to type a $10 and you type 100, or you mean to type 100 and you type 1,000, or whatever it might be. Or you think you're typing $100 and you put $10,000. Who knows? So you have to be very careful. He also talks about setting up multi-factor authentication and a PIN. And he says, believe the warnings Venmo issues about not using the app to pay people you don't know. And apparently the app has a code system where you can look at the user's profile to help you be certain you're paying the correct person. So watch out for that. Information hygiene. I think this is really critical information, financial information. Passwords and social security numbers. You want to make sure that your child is using a strong password in any of the apps that they're using that may be related to anything they're doing, you know, financially or even on their phone, because that phone could be the gateway to lots of other information that's there, their contact information, addresses that they might have in their contact information. They might have, you know, passwords on their phone. So they really need a strong password to keep, you know, the bad people out. And then also make them understand about using different passwords across different sites. Because if someone gets a password that you use consistently across a number of sites and they get the one password and you've used that same password across five different financial sites or whatever kind of sites, then you know, they're in like Flynn. So you just want to make sure that your kids understand the importance of passwords, strong passwords, multi-factor authentication, and things like that. Passwords. Eventually, also, social security numbers. You know, your child could go off to college and be at the local mall, and they could say, hey, do you want to open up a credit card? And they say yes, and, you know, they spew off their social security number right there in the store. So you've got to be careful or help them understand when a social security number is actually needed or not. Technically, I think a social security number is only required when it involves like income, like tax information, things related to taxes, the government, IRS, things like that. I'm not sure even your doctor's office is actually has to have your social security number, but how many times do any of us go to, you know, stores, department stores, doctor's offices, dentist's office, and they may ask for that information? You need to teach your children that, your adult children, when they go off in the world, because this isn't something we talk about normally. You know, sometimes we just know these things and we don't realize that it was actually somehow taught to us over time. Maybe like earlier we talked about making your own mistakes, or something we heard on the news. Well, if our kids aren't listening to the news, they may not know that people hack into your accounts if they have passwords and social security numbers. So please make sure that the children understand about protecting passwords and social security numbers. Also, make sure they know what needs to be done in case you aren't around and what information the doctor will need if they're going to the doctor's office. So insurance cards, there's, you know, fraud and around insurance information. People steal your identity to get medical care for themselves, and that could impact your own ability to get further care for yourself. So be careful when they're off on their own, what information they're going to provide doctors, insurance companies, pharmacies, that type of thing. W-4 tax form. So your child goes off, maybe they have a college job, maybe they're working in the college town where they are, and it could be one of the first jobs they've had, and now they're on their own. Do they know what a W-4 is? So the W-4 form is the form you fill out with your new employer to say what kind of withholdings you want on your income, what kind of tax withholding on the income that you're earning. And that also includes putting some personal information, but that is for tax purposes. So that your children need to understand the W-4 is for tax purposes. Just make sure they're only giving it to their employer. And do they know how to fill it out? So I believe there are like online tools on the IRS's website now to help people fill out the W-4s, because it was such a debacle with the withholdings for 2018. Many people didn't increase their withholdings when through the tax changes and were surprised that they owed money. So you want to make sure that your child understands what they're completing in the W-4. W-4 is that tax form to help your employer know how much to withhold. Now, if your young adult is now going off to college, they're earning money, the agreement, remember one of Mr. Lieber's first things on the checklist was budgets, begin a conversation about who's paying for what. So if your child has a college job, you may have already had that conversation, and the money they're earning is paying for, you know, ABC. And there may be no money left, because when you're a college student, you might only get 10 hours a week, at $10, you know, what, maybe $7, $8, whatever minimum wage is these days. $80 a week might not pay for much. It depends. Food, you know, beer. No, they wouldn't be drinking. Maybe their classes, their books, whatever you're going to make them pay for. Maybe they've had to take a student loan and now they're going to have to save money to pay the student loan. So whatever it might be, will there be any money left over? If there is going to be any money left over, you might want to talk to them about, instead of saving the money in the jars, as we described at the beginning of the show, where might be a better place to save money? There is something called, what, my favorite thing, Roth IRA. So a Roth IRA is a saving mechanism for retirement where you can put a certain amount of money in, depending on your age and your income level, and you don't get a deduction on your tax return for that. It's just an incentive to save. And what the incentive is if you put money in the account, you invest it, it grows. Eventually, when you take it out in a qualified distribution, there will be no income tax on it. The lovely thing about Roth IRAs, especially for young people, because they're so afraid to give up money, is that if they need to take out the original contribution some point down the road, they can. My goal and dream always is that if you get them saving and getting in that habit and they see the money starting to grow, it's that in itself is an incentive to them to do it, to save, to invest, and to keep it there. So that's always the hope, that they get in a good habit, they watch, and they start understanding what investing is, and you've taught them a really good habit there. But the hook is that they can always get out the original contributions if they want. Mr. Lieber had given a visual for people to understand the power of compounding, and that is especially relevant in a Roth IRA, because the power of that compounding is as that account grows, that is going to be income tax free, again, under a qualified distribution. So to demonstrate the power of compounding, he used a very high rate, which was 8%, which, you know, we may not be able to get these days in the market. But his demonstration, so I also showed it for 4%. So $250 a month for 40 years. So if someone starts saving at age 25 and waits till 65, so for 40 years at 8%, that would be an investment of $120,000, and that would grow to $878,000. I mean, it's crazy, the power of compounding. So steady growth, $250 a month, dollar cost averaging at 8%, 40 years would grow to $878,000. At 4%, it grows to $296,000, $296,475. So that's still a great investment. If we took the same $250 a month from 35 to 65, that's only 30 years at 8%. That's an investment of $90,000. That grows to $375,000 at 8%. At 4%, investment of $90,000 would grow to $174,000 and odd dollars. So still a great deal. We see the power of that money working for you. $250 from 45 to 65. So for 20 years at 8% with an investment of $60,000 grows to $148,000. At 4%, an investment of $60,000 grows to almost $92,000. So you kind of start talking about the power of compounding. You could even have them do like a project on this to understand. Now, again, we're talking about, you know, our young adults, our young college kids. Now, when I also said they could be working and have to contribute to their expenses. But remember, if you did a great job when they were little and they were saving all along, all those birthday gifts and Christmas gifts or Hanukkah gifts or whatever gifts someone may have given them over time, if they were saving all along, they may be able to use some of that money for their spending and invest their earnings to take advantage of that Roth IRA. They talk about, Mr. Lieber talks about authorized users on credit cards. Kids have to establish credit at some point. I think sometimes just because they're an authorized user doesn't mean they're necessarily going to establish credit. You have to talk to whoever the credit card issuer is as to how they would track that, if that would help, and what needs to be done to help your kids eventually have credit cards. You're going to have a credit history at some point to get an apartment, to get a job. I mean, employers do credit searches on folks when they hire them sometimes. When you go to buy or rent an apartment, they will do a credit check. When you go to get another credit card, if you really needed one for like a special purchase, you have to have some kind of credit history. So you may be able to do that with authorized user credit cards, meaning the parents have the credit card, but the children are authorized users. So check with their provider to see how that might help what you'd have to do. All right. And we are coming up on our last break, And so I'm probably going to go through when I come back through the last kind of items on his checklist so that I can then do the 8 financial tips for young adults. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then kind of wrapping this up, why it's so important to kind of have a good foundation for smart financial decision making as young adults, setting those good habits at an early age and how that helps us in our adulthood, and how having our adult children who are good with their financials will eventually help us when we get in our older years and need some help, or when they inherit. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
Not only is becoming a WDIY member a great way to support the programs you love, it has its benefits. WDIY members have access to our weekly member ticket giveaway emails, discover great concerts, theater performances, film screenings, and more, all while supporting the many choices and real voices on WDIY. Make your gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 7 or wdiy.org. Thank you.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices, and we're talking about what are we teaching our children about finances. And I'm referencing a few good articles that I had found. One was by Charles Sherry, 10 Tips for Teaching Kids About Money from Horse's Mouth. And a second one is from Ron Lieber for the New York Times. And Ron Lieber also has a couple books out, and I don't know if I wrote both of them down. He wrote The Opposite of Spoiled, and then he also has a new book coming out called What to Pay for College. So you can check those out if you'd like more information about that. He made a number of other points on the checklist, but I'm only going to mention a couple more. For the college bound, the FAFSA form, he said it's a great way to start having conversations about the finances. When applying for financial aid, which includes the ability to gain access to the federal student loan system, families must fill out a free application for federal student aid form. It contains a lot of household information. Students and a parent are both supposed to sign it and test to its accuracy. So it's a good time as any to talk to your teenager about how much money you make. After all, your child aspires to a life like the one you've provided, blah, blah, blah. So that is a good time to kind of maybe start having some conversations about that. And then he also recommended having a student loan spreadsheet. I think this is a great idea. I can't tell you how many people will come to us and say, hey, you know, I want to get my arms around my student loans. Can you help me figure this out? And I'll say, well, how much are you paying on the loans? I'm talking about adults, and they don't know. They say, oh, I don't really know. And they have to dig and find the schedule of loans. So from my perspective, know right away. Start a student loan spreadsheet. Make sure you understand what you're borrowing and from whom, and what rates of interest, what's the payment plan, what's the schedule. There are subsidized loans. There's unsubsidized loans. Subsidized loans mean you're not accruing interest during your college tenure. It starts accruing after. Unsubsidized, they're accruing interest during your college years, and you know that really adds up quite quickly. So have a schedule so your student understands what their loans are, what the terms are, what the interest rate is, and what kind of loans they are, so they know if they're paying them or not. I knew that because I had all the loans myself, so I knew how they were. Subsidized loans are awesome. Unsubsidized, not so much. And I also know, like, when I was in school, the college itself gave short-term loans. So I would take out a loan at the beginning of the semester, work during the semester, and paid down some of those loans throughout the semester. That kind of helped me keep it under control a little bit, but I still left school with a lot of loans. So those were some great tips on that checklist. Finally, there was an article from Investopedia by Amy Fontenelle, and that was updated May 17th, 2019, and she had 8 financial tips for young adults. 1, learn self-control. So we talked about that with the first article about learning delayed, not instant gratification, kind of waiting for things, the Oreo scenario. So talking about self-control, particularly with access to credit that young college students may have, because you start getting all the mailers in the mail. And if they think they can just start putting everything on a credit card without, you know, worrying about if they're paying for it or how they're paying for it today, that could end up being a problem. So learning self-control is to say, yes, you can buy that pair of jeans, but it's going to cost, you know, $40. Make sure you have the $40 before you put it on the credit card. And again, because we want the credit card to build up credit, but make sure you're able to pay it. That is what my daughter does. She has her credit card paid off instantly. As soon as something hits it, she pays it. I think that's great, but she's also been very good with money her whole life. 2, control your own financial future. If you don't learn to manage your own money, other people will find ways to mismanage it for you. And that, again, is a lesson that we learned in this book, The Way to Wealth by Benjamin Franklin. He says, why would you want to let anybody else have that control over you? Don't spend on credit. And this was, you know, back in the day, right? Don't spend on credit. This little book is great. I'm going to keep rereading it until I memorize these quotes. But he talked about frugality and making sure that you're, not spending. A fat kitchen makes a lean will, meaning a fat kitchen, meaning you're eating too much or buying too much, means you have nothing left when you die, nothing left to give. So control your own financial future. Know where your money goes. Once you've gone through a few personal finance books, you'll realize how important it is to make sure your expenses aren't exceeding your income. The best way to do this is by budgeting. I know people don't like that word, so I'm going to tell you about what is called the funnel method, where you put you deposit all of your income into a savings account or a money market account, have it all go in there, and once a month you transfer what you think you're spending to your checking account, where your whatever account you're paying your bills from. So once a month you say, I know I'm spending, you know, $500 a week. Well, transfer $500 a week over to that, you know, bill paying account. And if you go through more than that and you have to keep taking out of your savings, then you really are spending more than what you think, you know, your budget was of $500. It's kind of a good way to kind of keep you on track. So you have to, of course, understand what your after tax income is, to know then how much do you have to spend. And then when you look at my after-tax income, less the required spending, like my food, shelter, and housing, and insurances, what are the non-essential spending things I have? And, you know, kind of pad it a little bit. I like to go out to eat once in a while. So you throw a couple extra, you know, maybe $50 in your budget, come up with how much you think you're spending. And that's the amount that you transfer. Again, if you spend more than that, you have to transfer more than you're spending, more than you thought. And then you're not going to build up your savings. You can use apps for this. I've had people tell me they've had tons of success with these apps. And I was just recently at the Women's Summit, the Women's Business Council, the Chamber's Women's Business Council helps put on a big women's summit once a year at Cedar Crest College. And we did a panel on your girlfriend's finances, and we talked about using an app, and a couple young women came up to me very excited. She said, I never did budgeting. I don't understand finances. And I heard about this app, mint.com. And it's been revolutionary. She said, I know everything I'm spending. And her friend said, she told me about it. I'm really excited. And I really know how much I'm spending too. And it was so great to see these young women very excited about taking control of their finances. I know when Mint.com first came out, we had them as guests on the radio show. They called in and we talked about the app. And but so many more apps have evolved from there as well. But it sounds like that one's still good for a lot of people. I have someone else who told me about one called You Need a Budget, and it's YNAB, so YNAB.com, I believe. So check that out if that's going to help you understand how to work your finances a little bit more. Start an emergency fund. We can't say this enough. Everyone should have an emergency fund for those expenses you can't anticipate. You don't want to be withdrawing from your portfolio. We don't want you to take out early withdrawals out of your retirement accounts. No, no, no. So the reason you don't have to do that is because you have an emergency fund. An emergency fund, back in the day, we used to say, 3 to 6 months. You know, in today's environment with the economy and the things that we've experienced over the past, couple decades, you probably want to have like at least a 6 month emergency fund. And you can keep that in a high interest rate savings account. Online accounts offer some really attractive rates. So you'll still be earning something if you have this emergency fund. Good idea. Start saving for retirement. Roth IRA, great idea for that. Kind of combine that emergency fund possibility with your Roth, your saving. If you ever had to take it out, you can take out your original contributions, but start saving for retirement, especially if you get a match from your employer, because that is free money. So if your employer only puts money into your retirement account, if you do, you want to make sure that you at least put in that much. It's automatic savings. It has been proven that it's the best way to save. You set it and forget it. Get a grip on taxes. Make sure that you understand taxes. So again, this article was for, kind of young adults. I would say the folks who are kind of in the early, I call it the nesting stage, where they're kind of out of college and they're kind of getting used to, the realities of life, that you have to pay for your own food and shelter and things like that. And you also have taxes when you start working. So make sure you understand your taxes. Make sure you look at that first pay stub to see where all of the money is going. You might be paying for some health insurance. You might have a flexible spending account. You're going to be paying federal tax and state tax, maybe local tax, social security tax. Kind of have an understanding of where your money's going, because you can't think, oh, if I'm making, $1,000 a week, that you're going to have $1,000 a week, because you're not going to have anywhere near $1,000 a week, because there's all these other expenses that come out of your paycheck. Guard your health. Make sure you're taking care of health insurance premiums. Guard your wealth was another one of her points. If you want help managing money, there's different resources there. I kind of blew through the rest of that article because I also wanted to just share a couple little last comments if I have time here. Real quickly, my son is at Kutztown University. He's going to be going 5 years for accounting and financial planning. And he was doing bookkeeping for the newspaper. He works for the newspaper at the school. I said to my husband one day, we're crazy, we're busy. Why are we writing our bills and taking care of our finances? Let's hire our son to do it. And so we brought our son into kind of helping us with this. He's opening the mail. He's reviewing, credit card statements, and he's really getting an understanding of how bill paying works, whether it's online bill pay, automatic bill pay, or if we're writing checks, because we do all of those three. He's getting an understanding of what the bills mean. He's getting an understanding of due dates and making sure that there's money in the account before you pay the bills, because, there's money coming out of a checking account. And do you need to transfer money from the savings account? But what I wanted to also add is we had a neighbor who used to live next to us. He recently, younger than me, I think he was 50. He was a little older than me. I think he was 59, died of a heart attack, leaving his 24-year-old daughter left to take care of his estate. And you know, it's a big responsibility. And I asked my son recently, I said, Kyle, what have you learned from this experience of helping us with the finances? And he said, one thing I learned, Mom, is no one should be left with this without some previous knowledge. He said, there is a lot to know here. So that's one of the reasons, folks, we might not want to tell our children everything, and even our adult children, our children who are maybe 40 or 50, we might not want to tell them everything. But guess what? If something unexpected happens, it's already stressful enough dealing with the loss of a parent or a loved one. It really is a struggle to have to deal with that, plus the financial, trail that we leave behind us, whether it's passwords to our computer that no one knows where they are, bills, liabilities, insurance payments that have to be made that we didn't know about. And if you don't make them, something bad happens. So there's a lot of incentive for having conversations around our financial life with our trusted children. Hey, folks, thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. Thank you, Lori and Shandi, for being here. Thank you, listeners. Next week, I'm going to talk about resources in our community, financial and otherwise. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.